Hey everybody, my name is Johnny and I'm an alcoholic. I'd like to thank Brian and Liz for extending me the privilege of participating in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I don't know how many of you feel about it, but to me, it's always been some type of a privilege to be allowed to come and sit in these meetings. I have never been able to get it through my head, and I hope and pray to God that I never do, that I have a right to be here and occupy space just because I don't drink anymore. I always want it to be a privilege for me to come and sit in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and come in contact with this God of my understanding that I discovered in these rooms. So I'm very appreciative that they allowed me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope with you folks this morning. I'm extremely pleased to be here this morning, full of clothes and in my right mind. I don't say that for any particular reason, except to tell you that the longer I stay sober, the more necessary it becomes for me to remember from whence I came. And I never want to forget a little over 35 years ago today, I was crawling around on my knees in a cell in solitary confinement in the Massachusetts Penitentiary. And because of a loving God has expressed himself through a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, it's no longer necessary for me to crawl around my hands like an animal. If I don't get another living thing out of this deal at all, I can live with it all the way home. Makes me feel good. Now, I'd like to be able to stand here today and tell you without a doubt in my mind that that's where alcohol and drugs took me to. Oh, God, I'd love to tell you that. That's where I took me to. The only thing that alcohol and drugs did in my life was kept me alive long enough to stumble into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm as sure as I'm standing here, if I hadn't taken a drink of alcohol, I'd have blown my brains out before I was 9 years old. I've always been a misfit. Never seemed to belong anywhere. Not much has changed either, I'll tell you that. Still feel like a misfit. Well, read up here last night. Military man, been all over the world. And that new rampant precision. I mean, really, read. I get up here on Sunday morning, I got a bunch of brain dead options up here with me for Christ's sake. I mean, you saw him, I didn't, right? And then I said, I think how sick these guys are up here. That lady that came up here, the pregnant woman, and they pointed out somebody who's responsible for that. And Sicko over here says, maybe he ought to read how it works. I rest my case. I don't know how you feel about it, but I knew as much about whiskey when I was 6 years old as I know right now. As much about whiskey. I knew what it does to people, what it did to people, and what it always did to people. Everybody in my family drank whiskey. They made it, and they drank it, and they do the things who, the people who make whiskey and sell whiskey do. My uncle who drank whiskey went to penitentiaries, no big deal. Aunt who drank whiskey worked in those houses on the other side of the tracks, no big deal. Mom drank whiskey and beat up Dad. Dad drank whiskey and beat up Mom. They both got drunk, beat me up. I thought the whiskey did the people. No big deal. But I said, I'm not going to be like that. I don't want to be like that. I don't like these people. I'm restless and I'm irritable. I'm discontent. I went out of this deal. I don't know how to do it. So I look up one day, I see my grandmother. Now, my grandmother lived till she was almost 90 years old. Never took a drink of alcohol or smoked a cigarette in her life, Grandma didn't. So Grandma wouldn't think it's any big deal. I've been sober 32 and a half years. Said me. I used to watch my grandma on Sunday mornings. I stayed with my grandma a lot because We had missing people in my house, I'll tell you that. And I used to watch Grandma. She'd get up on Saturday. They used her house for a war's known on Saturdays. They'd beat each other up, stole each other's women, did all the stuff they do. And Grandma would get up on Sunday morning, step over the bodies, put her new dress on and go somewhere. Now, I don't know where Grandma went at that time. A couple hours later, Grandma came back, and while Grandma was gone, something had happened to her. I didn't know what it was. Something happened to Grandma. She was a little easier in her step. Grandma was a little easier in her being. Grandma had a smile on her face and a glow about her that she didn't take out the door with her. And that baffled me. But then there was my grandfather. My grandfather used to leave on Thursdays. He'd get back on Tuesdays or Wednesdays. They brought him back in all various shapes and forms. One time they brought him back on a wagon. He'd been shot and stabbed and thrown out the second floor balcony of a whorehouse in Kansas City. I took a look at that deal and put my keen alcoholic mind to work. Isn't that amazing? All the alkies talk about the keen alcoholic minds. Non-alcoholics don't talk about the keen alcoholic mind. But you never heard that Al-Anon speaker as he says, my keen thinking alcoholic. I mean, you got to be down there. It's your grandpa and his grandma. Grandma's got the best deals. I go with grandma. Be like grandma. Do what grandma does, be like grandma. Without one little thing, I'm not like my grandmother. I didn't know that I had this thing inside of me that was just waiting to be born. This insanity that was waiting to be triggered and sent into a new direction like a rocket ship somewhere. So I went with my grandmother on Sunday morning. I sat down in my grandmother's church with my grandmother. I watched my grandmother in that church. Something happened to my grandmother. I watched it. I watched her transform in that church from a sullen, hateful old lady to a beautiful old woman sitting there. And I turned around, a guy sitting next to me. The same thing's going on with him. It happened to me. I'm confused. What I'm doing, I'm sitting there getting loaded up with guilt. Because I brought a basket full in there with me anyhow. And I'm getting more, because they tell me I'm supposed to love and honor and respect my parents, and I hate them. And I'm frightened to death. And I don't know what to do about that. So a couple of weeks later, I'm sitting on the back porch of my grandpa's house, and I watch my grandpa stash his jug. And I did something that I swore I'd never do. I went across the yard where my grandpa stashed his jug, took his jug, and took a drink of alcohol. That's all I did. And it changed my life. My life was never going to be the same again until the 4th day of November, 1959. It was always going to go in the same direction, straight to hell. Because alcohol does something for me that it doesn't do for everybody that drinks it. I am an alcoholic, and I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I have some type of an abnormal reaction to alcohol. I don't know why it is. I really don't care why it is. Thank God I discovered sitting in these rooms what was wrong with me. I have this physical allergy to alcohol. When I take a drink of my, it's worth inside of me, kind of still and screaming mad. As soon as I switch off in my head, it says, I don't give a damn. I don't care what's going on. I don't care. God, what a wonderful thing. Just to be able to sit there and go, I don't care. And people want to know, why do you drink? Why do you drink? Oh, Jesus, man. The answer to the world. See, that wouldn't be so bad if that was all I had. But Bill Wilson writes in the book Alcoholics Anonymous about alcoholics of my type. He specifically states it, alcoholics of my type. He wrote the book for alcoholics of my type. Men and women who could not drink alcohol successfully without treating this thing that drove me into the gates of insanity and death. It's called a phenomenon of craving. Once I have a drink of alcohol, I can't quit drinking. I don't know how to quit drinking. For Christ's sake, I have never been able to quit drinking. I'm saying here before, if I lived till the 4th day of November, it's been 34 years since I've had any of that stuff in my system, and to this instant, I haven't quit drinking. It quit me. If I just still drink it, I still be getting the hell out there. I'll tell you that, boy. God told me a long time ago, you should never quit anything you can still do. And I suppose, from where I sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, there's a lot of people who can still drink. More power to them. I can't. Because what happened to me when I took a drink of alcohol happened to me every time I took a drink of alcohol for the next 20 years of my life. I took a drink of alcohol and 3 days later I was pulled out from underneath a bridge and stood in front of a judge and sentenced to the Hutchinson State Reform School. 20 years later I took a drink of alcohol. They stood me in front of a judge and sentenced me to 20 years in penitentiary. That's what happened to me when I drank. I got drunk in one places too. I travel around out there. I went from reform school to reform school, to junior penitentiaries to penitentiaries to nut houses. Now they call them treatment centers. I like nut house better. A little more macho. Really, if you're going to do bad, you ought to do bad. You shouldn't quit drinking just because you puke a little. Hang in there. Give it everything you got. I did. I threw everything into the fight and lost it. What you're looking at this morning is an absolute and total failure of life. Ain't nothing successful about people in Alcoholics Anonymous. They're all failures. This is the greatest collection of failures you ever saw in your life, all around you. And yet the greatest fear from the people I work with in Alcoholics Anonymous always seem to be they're afraid of failing. I just want to giggle at them. I threw everything into the battle. I threw my health, my sanity, my money, my family, every ounce of talent I ever had, any type of ability I had in my life, I threw it in there from that first drink. I'm sitting on a girl from a reform school. I'm 10 or 11 years old drinking a bottle of Marco Petri red wine. Most of you have never heard of Marco Petri red wine, I can tell. I tell you, I've never heard of it. Because it was experimental stages of Thunderbird. That's why you never heard of it. Tell you how bad it was, it never saw grape. But it did the thing, I'll tell you that. See how funny that is. A couple of friends of mine were supposed to be up there this weekend with me. Aunt got sick, so didn't make it. But we were down in Palm Springs one time. We were at a nice restaurant having dinner. It's this thing. It's one of the big fancy restaurants. You know, they got one of them guys with tuxedo. You know, it's not like the mess hall of San Quentin, Fred, but it's okay. This guy said, "Oh, we got one of the things hanging around his neck." I didn't know what it was, because I'm not very cultured. Somebody told me it was a corkscrew, and he was a wine steward. I called him up, we played a little game. I said to him, "These people are always kidding me about Marco Petri red wine." "Oh, there never been anything." I called him over, I said to him, "Hey, what do you want to know?" I said, "You ever heard of Marco Petri red wine?" He said, "Why, sure I have." He said, "But I don't know anybody who ever drank it." He said, "We'll have to talk about it." But you ain't gonna let any self-respect knock you goodbye with that one. I said to him, "I used to drink it by the gallons." He said, "Sure you did." And he wandered off and stood in the corner. And every once in a while I glance over here and see him looking at me. And the minute I caught his eye, I'd do things like this. Kept him on his toes, I can tell you that. But I'm drinking this stuff and I'm sitting in the street corner and another illusion that I hear in Alcoholics Anonymous that I think is an illusion or some type of lingo, somebody, they said alcohol quit working. Hey, people say alcohol quit working. It never quit working. I know what takes the big hurt away. I know exactly what takes it away. If I'm in the wrong place, it's the wrong time and wrong set of circumstances, I can probably drink. Ain't nobody in Alcoholics Anonymous who can't drink. Alcoholics drink. I'm sitting there, it ain't taking me where I want it to take me. See, that's the difference. I want it to take me someplace. Far, far away. With somebody else, doing something else. And it ain't doing that. And I'm confused because I've always had. The guy patted me on the shoulder and said, "Try these." Gave me some pills. Now, I don't remember saying to him, "What are those?" "Will they bother me if I take them?" Thank God they weren't excellent, that's all I can say. We have a whole new 12-step program called Laughter with Anonymous, I suppose. I could be standing here this morning as the adult child of a laxative taker. I would have been functional, but mother sat on the toilet all the time when I was little. I hear stuff stupid in that around here. It worked. Sit on that same street corner a couple of years later on a girl from another reform school. I'm eating these pills and drinking this wine, and it ain't moving me too fast. And a guy stuck a needle in my arm. And for the next 14 years of my life, I stuck needles in my arm and ran in and out of institutions. That's what I do. So I live out in the streets. And I do what people like me who live in the streets do. I destroy everything that comes near me. I'm like a plague out there. And there's a reason for that. I'm a taker. I'm a taker of things, and I'm a user of people. I'm a loser. You're looking at one. I'm selfish, self-centered, self-serving, and I got an ego bigger in this whole room. My lifetime was spent before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and for a long time after I was here. And sometimes, maybe a great portion of the time today, without a conscious thought or a conscious concern for any other human being who lived upon the face of this earth, I wasn't interested in you at all. Unless you had something I wanted. Then when I got whatever it was you had that I wanted, I cast you aside like so much trash around about my business. My inventories have told me over the years, before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and for a long time after I was here, I never uttered the word love. It wasn't in my vocabulary. Takers like me don't love anyhow. Takers like me take. Takers aren't lovers. Takers are takers. Users are users, but they're not lovers. If I told you I love you, you had an edge. And I didn't give you an edge. It was a weakness. I had to stay strong and survive out there in the streets where I lived, doing the things that the newspapers write up about all day long today. 1951, I'm on the way to the penitentiary. I'm in there at Los Angeles County Jail, and my mother's screaming at me through the visiting screen that I'm a murderer. It seemed that my 17-year-old brother had gotten into some of my poison and took an overdose of it and died. I didn't handle that very well, got mad at it. She handcuffed between two detectives right under a tree 2 days later while they buried the only thing in my life I ever cared about before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, my baby brother. I got all the guilt and shame and humiliation and degradation of a lifetime hanging on my shoulders, and I want to show some type of emotion, but I want to do something to show that I care, but I'm totally powerless to do it. Because I'm standing right smack dab in front of all my people, all the people from my street people, all my gang members, all the things that we did down here in Little Brooklyn Lodge where I live. And I can't show weakness, I can't show any type of thing at all. I just sit there and defy everybody. Well, I'll never forget the look in my mother's eyes that day. That look just said, now look what you've done, scum, you've killed our baby. That was the look. She never said it, she didn't have to. My life was never the same after that. It just went into oblivion. It took the next 4.5 years of my life locked up in the penitentiary. I came out of the penitentiary trying to prove what a psychiatrist in San Quentin told me wasn't true. He said, Johnny, people like you don't change. So you're doomed to die in an institution. He took me down and showed me a little room and he said, you're going to end up here, hot shot. And I told him, not me, I'm different. Room sound of the alcoholic. I'm different, my case is different. That's what's going to kill the alcoholics in this room. We're going to die drunk. We're going to die drunk, being different. I didn't have to do that. I come walking to that institution down, they turned and I had that deal beat, and 6 months later I'm landing in a nut house kicking and screaming. And that's when I made my round to some of the better acting academies in the country interviewing psychiatrists. We used to have interesting conversations, the doctors and I. They talked to me about my mother. I talked to them about their mother. They get very annoyed at that. They taught me better living through electricity. You saw Freddie up there filming with his microphone? He was on his own. And what I hope and pray to God is my last interview with one of them skull jockeys. within a federal government hospital in Fort Worth, Texas. If I lived to be 1,000 years old, I'll never forget that day. I'll never forget how lost I was, how confused I was, how lonely I was, and how so out of it I must have been. There's no hope. I've been everywhere and done anything. I've done it all. I'm 25, 26 years old. I'm through. And I don't know what to do about it. And I've gone into this room, this psychiatrist's room that day. I look up against the wall and I see all these plaques and diplomas and degrees that this man has. And a street urchin like me automatically thinks that symbolizes some type of knowledge. Automatically, that's one of them people, one of the superior people in the world. And so thinking that and living like that and believing that, there was a ray of hope that came into me. Maybe this is the answer. Maybe this is where the place is. I don't know. So I sit down, and the doctor sit down, and the doctor started to talk to me. He hadn't got 10 words out of his mouth before everything that I thought and felt was thrown completely out the window. Because he looked at me and said, "Johnny, if you didn't drink these things and swallow these things and smoke these things and shoot these things, you wouldn't have any problems." When I was in the Hutchinson State Reform School, my counselor told me if I didn't drink, I'd be okay. Juvenile Hall, Los Angeles, my counselor told me if I didn't drink, I'd be okay. In the Whittier State Reform School, I was told if I didn't drink these things, swallow these things, smoke these things, to shoot these things, I'd be okay. Pacific Life Boys Home, I was told that. San Quentin, I was told that. Folsom, I was told that. Lexington, I was told that. Everywhere I went, these people told me the same thing. But nobody ever took into consideration the very simple it is. I was as physically sober when they told me that as I am right now. Physically sober. How I want to scream out at him, "Good God, doctor, don't you understand?" Because you don't. I'm sorry. You're not an alcoholic. You never understand me, and I'll never understand you. If you're not an alcoholic, you'll never understand why I drink. And if you're not an alcoholic, I'll never understand why you don't. Really. I mean, you're not. I get a chew sometimes of taking pot shots at Al-Anon, but this is not a pot shot at Al-Anon. This is the honest truth. You've been to these Al-Anon banquets and things, and some of these Al-Anon ladies get up there, the great brilliant people, all these tragedy stories about how one tragedy after another comes into their life, and some of them are true. I've worked through some of it with some of them. But as sick as I am, I'm sitting in the back going, "Drink! Why don't you drink, for Christ's sake?" You know why we don't drink? That makes me dizzy. Hell, if it didn't do any more than that for me, I wouldn't drink it either. Right? God, that's really sick, I'll tell you that. Not me. I tell you, when all hell's breaking loose, man, they're after me. The tigers are out there. The narcotic officers are diving through the window. The police are shooting at me running down the street. The gang members are trying to blow up my car. Come and get me, you son of a gun. Invisible. The difference. But see, I ain't got any idea, any handle on this thing called the phenomenon of craving. I can't understand why I can't get that same relief every time. Why can't I just take a couple of drinks and get that relief? So I'd always have to end up in the penitentiary somewhere. Some nut house. Well, I don't understand this. I don't take off to get this kind of heroin habit going. I don't take off to get drunk. I don't take off to end up in penitentiaries and nut houses. I just want some relief, for Christ's sake. In the back of my little mind is the knowledge that all I got to do is just pick up a drink. I'm free. So, alcoholics tell you, damn this audacity to forget anything they don't want to remember. Why aren't why human beings have the ability to just completely and totally eliminate any type of painful experience from their psyche? And if you don't believe that's true, And if it wasn't true, no woman would ever have her second child. That's painful. I know it's painful. I watched it. I watched my grandson being born. And I saw the agony my daughter went through. Jesus. You know, I feel like I'm talking to my daughter and said, you know, I'm not sure what that's called. Now, she going to quit it? That's where we tell hockey's. Guy laying down on the floor, throwing up his guts, everything he's got gone. He said, now, you know, alcohol is your problem, man. Now, she know what's wrong. You're going to quit doing it. God really looks at you like you're crazy. What do you mean, quit it? The only way of relief by God. I stood in front of a Superior Court judge not very long ago, well, 30-some years ago, really. Seemed like it was only yesterday. I weighed 128 pounds and I was yellow. The doctor stood at the foot of my bed, the doctor stood at the thing that day and told me that I was going to die instead. I didn't die. I lived for 3 days in some type of terror agony in that jailhouse down the roof. It was a long time before they had any type of medication, but on my property slip was a big blue in. There was a law against administering any type of medication to anybody with a narcotic record. The big joke was that was on the floor in the Los Angeles County Jail and say to us, if you live long enough, we'll take you to court. I lived long enough. I lived through a nightmare because one night in the middle of my madness there, 17 or 18 days without sleeping or anything, and really I'm saying that because I didn't sleep very well last night. In agony. I screamed out there on the prayer every time in my life. I said, oh God, help me. It's a prayer of surrender to the alcoholic. I'm supposedly sure of that. I've never heard an alcoholic in my life with any degree of sobriety or any type of comfortable, happy sobriety. He would get up there and say, well, I just thought one day I'd quit drinking. I think I'd just do it all. I'm just going to be happy, joyous, and free forever. And do that. Just call me a blood-sucking parasite at society that day. I had no right being around decent people for the woman who was packing my child. I cared anything about that child, I knew a bill I'd lay eyes on it. But that man said to me that day literally drove me insane. Literally. The last time of me, he said, I really was for the first time. Not as I always thought I was, but as I always knew I was. You see, I have never been able to despise or hide me from me. I always knew what kind of a scumbag I was. I got the faces of the people I'd harmed and the things I'd done and written on the forehead of my head. I know what's going on, lies and destroyed and things of the nature that I did. Unnamed faces of people were out there. I still got it. And I can't go to stuff like that. I have to drink to erase the memories and drive it away from me. That's why I kept going out there. The first time I ever came face to face with myself with nothing to take away the pain, my brain literally exploded. And I spent the next 9 months of my life crawling around that cell in San Quentin, you're the man out of total insanity. That's what came to your means on the fourth day of November, 1959, a thing. Not a human being. Human beings don't do what I do. Animals never sink that low, so I couldn't call myself an animal. I was a thing. I was a thing without feeling. I was a thing without concern. I was an animal who would explode in you at any moment and destroy you if you looked at me cross-eyed. That's the type of thing I came. I came out with a piece of paper in my pocket. One of the leading psychiatrists in the state of California said I'll never be able to live outside of an institution without some type of medication in my system. And I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous to get sober either. Not me. I was sober when I came here. I was as physically sober when I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous as I am right now. I came to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on a Sunday morning because the institution I was there let women come in here. And I saw a few guys like me hanging out in the lobby last night waiting for the dance to start. And I said, yeah. Takes one to know one. You know, I saw that man that day to smell that perfume, I've been honking and sniffing around here ever since. I don't, maybe I like to look back on it in my moments of reverence when I think that I'm wonderful and one of God's favorites. There was an answer to prayer. There were many prayers, but nobody prayed for me. I prayed for myself one day. God help me. It took a long way to do it. I had to go to insane. After I said that, I went insane. I was locked up. Changed that person and animal, crawling out of my own slime and filth for 9 months. Throwing my food up against the wall in rages. I hope people talk about blackouts. You ever been in an insane blackout? You just go completely insane for 3 or 4 days. You come through, pulling food down off the wall. You're throwing it if you're trying to eat it because you're hungry. That can change your needs. You know what I came in with? My arrogance and my pride and my differences. And I sit down in the back row back there, what I lovingly like to call my throne of contempt. I had my coat collar up and my shades on, because that's cool. If I'd have been any cooler when I got here, I'd have froze to death for God's sake. I remember looking up on the backboard, I saw it through the gate, and I thought to myself, my God, I've wandered into an anti-aircraft brigade. I didn't know what Alcoholics Anonymous was. I said, what is this? I said to this guy, because Alcoholics Anonymous, I sung down in my seat. Gangs was not supposed to be hanging out with them winos. And gangs was anonymous, or over 5th anonymous, or any kind of woman was anonymous, anything. Alcoholics Anonymous. But well, I said, I'm waiting for these women to tell their racist stories. Now, you got to remember something. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous 30-some years ago, there weren't very many young, pretty girls in Alcoholics Anonymous. If they were, they weren't sending up that penitentiary where I was at, I'll tell you that. One girl got up that day and said they had drank for a long time. You would look at them and know they'd been somewhere for a long time. They said, I used to drink. I said, I bet you did. Bad stuff, too. I can tell. That's another thing when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a walking encyclopedia of useless information. I know so damn much about what is true, I don't know what is true. I can't tell the truth from false. I think my life is normal. Well, what's going on? You were talking about God. I'm leaving. I ain't sitting around listening to that crap. They're one of them things. But you know what hooked me? It's the same thing that hooked me today. 30-some years later, just the people of Alcoholics Anonymous, they hooked me. We had talked about it last night. You people. You know what these crazy people did? Really? 185 miles from Los Angeles to the penitentiary I was in. They got in the car every Sunday. These people. There wasn't any freeways going up there that day. It took them all day to get up there. They'd been 2 hours talking to a room full of people who didn't want to listen to them. And left. They got people like me sitting in the back room making fun of them. Now that's sick. They're going home and I'm staying and I'm making fun of them, for Christ's sake. Something wrong with that. But that's what keen alcoholic mind was. These people absolutely mystified me. I didn't know what they were doing. Had no way of knowing what they were doing. You know why I didn't know? But these people were givers. They were giving a little like my old sponsor used to say, just for the hell of giving it. They were taking time out of their busy lives to do it for free and for fun. They weren't getting any paychecks for it. They were doing it. They drove expenses. They drove 185 miles up those little things and they talked to one another and had an AA meeting all the way up and all the way back. And it baffled me. I couldn't understand. See, I had never seen a giver. My entire lifetime, I look back, I had never seen anybody who ever gave anything just for the hell of giving it. There was a certain amount, maybe my grandmother. But these people had no irons. I didn't look at it. Well, one time I said to one of the guys, I said, hey. He said, what do you want? I said, what do you get out of coming up there anyhow? You come back to sicko? You like to see the animals in the cages? What's your deal anyhow? He gave me one of the typical Alcoholics Anonymous answers. Well, kid, you can answer that question. You won't have to ask it. I can say that to all the critics. And you can wonder what people who are putting these committees together and doing this work and making that coffee and cooking that barbecue and smiling and shaking hands. And you can figure out what they're doing. You may cross over a line that'll save your life, because you have to move somewhere in this life if you're going to stay sober alcoholics of my time. From a taker to a giver. You got to do it just for the hell of doing it. You can't put a price tag on it. I can't sell you Alcoholics Anonymous. This is not my occupation. This is my avocation. I work every day. I go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings at night. I sponsor a lot of people. And I do it for free and for fun, because it was done for me. That's why I do it. I sit in those meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous completely confused like what went on here. I sit back there with my crazy head and my differences and my... I didn't understand what people did, but crazy in fact to say, I used to drink, now I don't drink anymore, and everything was wonderful. So I guess I'm not alcoholic then. I'm not drinking either, I'm crazy. I wish I was alcoholic, I said, if I could just be that simple. Then it'd be all right. But there's something far more wrong with you than that. Alcohol doesn't seem to be the problem. You get busy, they say. I got busy. See, in my neighborhood, if you didn't move fast, a bullet caught you. So I learned to move fast. I thought that was action. I put the ashtray, poured coffee, smiled at people. Went back there and set an inventory point and died. I'm doing what you told me to do, and I'm crazy. Nuts. One time I said, every time you say anything to any of these people, you know what they tell you? Oh, it's in the book. What's in the book? Oh, it's there. You go look for it, you'll find it. Now, I discovered something since I've been sober. I suppose if you want to hide anything from an alcoholic, put it in the book. They don't look there. I figured that. I figured for my own well-being, three or four reasons why not. There ain't no chapter into thinking. That cleaned out about 90% of the room right there, I'll tell you. What do you mean by that? No chapter that deals with issues? Sorry. And there damn sure ain't any chapters here that deals with healing the wounded inner child. Don't get me wrong. I'm not taking pot shots at any other program. I don't go over there and talk about alcoholism. I don't want to bring your psychobabble into Alcoholics Anonymous. Let's just call Alcoholics Anonymous what it is. Keep the charlatans out who are selling all this program to people. They're sending everybody here in masses like it's for everybody. This ain't for everybody. I'm sorry. There isn't anything worse than sitting in a meeting and not identifying with nothing that goes on there. Not at all. You don't believe it? Who said it's on the 12-step programs that you don't belong to, that you have no identity with? You see how restless and irritable and discontent you become, and how angry you become because you didn't get what you got coming. You know why I'm sober today? There's a couple of reasons. I don't know how you were, but when I first got sober, I was under the impression what I heard from Alcoholics Anonymous poured into it all true. Yeah, it usually is basically the truth. Other things from podium, of course, any newcomer like me has selective hearing anyhow. I hear what I want to hear. And I want to hear it. Sometimes if you're sitting next to me in a meeting and something's said, you can almost hear a clang as my mind closes. My arrogance and my defiance, I was going to tell you what I was going to do. I'm sitting in this penitentiary, you got nothing else to do. So I thought I'd go through a program of recovery and prove to you I was different wouldn't work for me. I really believed I was different. I walked different, I talked different, I acted different, and I was different. But nobody liked me. The greatest single event that has ever happened to me in my entire lifetime happened to me sitting in a room with a man in that 10th century doing what our program of recovery says is the fifth step. The greatest thing of event that ever happened to me in my life is I stand here before today. Nothing, everything else pales in comparison to that. I heard myself admit to this man that I was an alcoholic. And from way down deep inside of me, there came a freedom that I carry with me right now. See, I stand here this morning, I know exactly what's wrong with me. I'm an alcoholic. I suffer from a disease called alcoholism. I'm not an alcoholic and anything. When I was an alcoholic and something or other, I separated me from you. I wasn't like you. I was better than you, or worse than you, or smarter than you, and different than you, or sick, but I was not like you. When I became an alcoholic, I have to practice my own program of recovery for alcoholics of my type. In 4,000 years of recorded history, this is the only thing that's ever worked for alcoholics of my type. So what really basically has come down to, folks, is simply this. This is a matter of life and death, and it's my life. I realized that day. It's my life. It's not your life. God, I'd like for everybody to have what I found in Alcoholics Anonymous. In reality, no, you're not going to get it. Because the differences will come in, and you're not alcoholic for all kinds of different reasons. But I don't want you. You come sitting beside me with me in those meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous that I attend. Every week we have 25 or 30 newcomers. Every seat in the house is full, but the patients keep changing. Year in and year out. It wasn't long to fall out of the pile and sit there and do what he's supposed to do. Take the actions that are necessary. That's all. Alcoholics Anonymous is a program of action that says spiritual principles and practices a way of life to spoil the necessity to have to drink alcohol. I know that. The book says it. I believe it. I can tell you why. Because the word I had to swallow more than anything else. I had a hard time doing it for a long time. I had to swallow the word called practice. Practice these principles. Practice them. Checklist, if you will. Practice them. Practice them. Every day of my life. I wouldn't no more think about getting up in the morning without reading the third step prayer in my book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I think about flying around this room. How long? You do my reading in the morning with my book, Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the only book I read. I'm not saying I don't read anything else, but it's the only book I read. That and the sport pages. That's it. And I'm an alcoholic. And I'll tell you, I don't know anybody who lives upon the face of this earth that I would trade places with. Not a soul. There's a single solitary soul who lives in this world who I think lives any better than I do. They may have more things than I do. They may have less trouble than I do. They may have less vices than I do. But that doesn't mean they live any better than I do. And I live with a quiet heart most of the time. Because I've got a very simple thing. When I'm wrong, I promptly admit it, take my lips and go on about my business, never defend myself. I don't defend myself against anything. I don't defend alcohol. Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't need any defense. Not at all. Why should I? There's a line in our book, Chuck taught me about it. Somewhere in this life, we'll have to cease to fight anything or anybody. I ain't got no fights anymore. I lost the battle, folks. I lost the battle of life. Like a little child, I come wandering into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous on the 4th day of June, 1961, fresh out of the penitentiary, armed with only one thing. To the best of my ability, I completed the first 9 steps of our program, recovery, so the nightmares, most of them had been erased. See, that's what the amend steps are all about. Moving the nightmares out, so you can sleep in peace because you cleaned up that side of the street. That's what the amend is about. It's freedom. It's amazing to me that your promises are never mentioned until after the 9th step in our book. I don't know anything about Alcoholics Anonymous. I know an awful lot about this program recovery. I know an awful lot about staying sober because I studied the book Alcoholics Anonymous and 12 and 12 and AA comes of age and trying to figure out where I was going to take over. I ran into a hell of a thing when I came out of College Street. I'll share this with you because today, everybody just takes it for granted that people come in here with some type of other chemicals in the system besides alcohol. You know, when I came out of that penitentiary, people tried to keep me out of AA meetings. I used to go to participation meetings in Long Beach. They'd call me by the time I got to the foot, and half of the people would leave. I've never said I was anything but an alcoholic. I have never owned up to anything but alcoholism. They wrote letters to New York about me, trying to keep me from being an AA meeting. I'm here to tell you that most of the people who wrote those letters aren't here anymore. I am. Because I was schooled in Alcoholics Anonymous, and when I came out of that penitentiary, I got a hold of a guy by the name of Norm Alpe who took me to Alcoholics Anonymous. He took me and introduced me to a separate, complete separate thing from the program of recovery. It's called a Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. A fellowship is made up of people. Fallible, human, weak human beings is what we're made of. All of us have feet of clay. There isn't anybody who rises so high that he has no feet of clay. None of us. But we live without a stroke and we're going about our business. No one told me about that because I didn't know what to do in AA meetings. He told me to shut up. Tell me to listen. Shut up. He didn't just say shut up. He said, shut up. That's what he said. And in those days, we didn't have big meetings. I mean, if we ever saw anything like this, we'd have fainted, didn't it? One night, a hot July night, I've got to tell you this story. This is typical man Alfie is what it is. Sick man that he was. I don't have a driver's license because it had been suspended in 1946 for the rest of my natural life. Which is a long time. So I can't drive a car. Norm won't let me drive a car either. I said, why not? He said, citizens like me have a right to be protected from jerks like you. True. So I have to call him up. Find out when he's going to meet so I can go with him. So I called him up just one day, hot in July, I called him up. Norm, what do you want? Heck, I asked, hurry up, I'm busy. I'm going to meet tonight, Norm. You come down and pick me up. Okay, 6:30, be standing on the street corner. I'll wait for you. Do that up here, too. 6:30 came, I'm standing on the street corner, man. I know where we're going. We're going to San Andrew, a little club over on Main Street. It's a garage. Not a club, it's a garage, about the size of this stage. Got 50 people in there smoking 4 packs of cigarettes during the meeting. I mean, they are puffing them and smoke going this high. I know where we're going. I've been there before. So I'm going to be comfortable. Put on my new tank top and my new shorts, my new thong. I slipped back my hair, put my shades on, and stood at the street corner waiting for my sponsor. He drove up, took one look at me, and drove off. These people who've ever heard Norm Alpe on tape don't know how close it came to you never hearing him on tape. If I could have caught his car, I'd have killed him. I ain't never been that insane since I've been sober, before or since. I've been humiliated up to here. I'm tired of him yelling in me, telling me to shut up, telling me to go to work. I called him up in the middle of the night and I said to him, Norm, he said, what do you want, jackass? Some of us have to work tomorrow. He never get away with it. Norm, I said to him, you treat me like an idiot. He said, Johnny, you are an idiot. I took offense to that. I said, how come you treat me like that? How come you left me stand on a street corner? He said, Johnny. He said, I'm going to ask you a question. I changed the whole complexion of the thing. I was going to give him an answer. He said, would you go to church dressed like that? I said, no, I wouldn't. He said, you ain't going to my church dressed like that either. I said, how come you yell at me in meetings and tell me to shut up? He said, Johnny, if you want to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, you don't want to listen. If you want to get up and wander around for people to see you, that seems to be your business. Did you ever talk to things that maybe somebody else does? I said, no, Norm, I never have. Why? He said, I didn't think so. So selfish, self-centered people like you will never think about anybody but yourself. Now, you better sit still in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and pay attention to every living thing that's said in there. Because somewhere out in that world, when you're living out there and that craziness is all about you, you may need every phrase, every word, every sentence you've ever read about this program, every meeting you've ever been to. It's come true. It really has come true. I used to call him up in the middle of the night. What's the matter, jackass? My program ain't working, man. He said, try ours. You see how cruel he was? I only heard that at 2 o'clock in the morning. But he always, he explained everything to me. I thought he entails explain everything to me. He says, Johnny, your program never did work. He said, if your program worked, what the hell are you going to AA meetings for? My program don't work, folks. I'll tell you something. Yours is yours. If your program worked, what the hell are you doing in an AA meeting? My program works. It works real well. You know why I know it works real well? Because nobody copies a loser. Everything out there has been taken from this magnificent fellowship called Alcoholics Anonymous. Nobody copies losers. I didn't, but I was a loser. I'm sober today because I emulate the winners. The old man that we were talking about last night was the closest thing to a father I've ever known. He sat and rocked me to sleep like a baby and told me things. I'd ride around with him in meetings and stuff, and I'd get stuff, and I'd try to say things to him, and he wouldn't listen to me because he'd always talk. He'd say, that's not the way I said it. So one night I stole something off the literature table. Can't argue with what you find on the literature table, can you? So I'm going to ride down the road. Matter of fact, we're coming back from Santa Maria. And I'm going to read him this thing. He said, God, we were chosen. He said, hold it. I said, what's the matter? He said, what makes you think we're chosen? He said, it sits right here. We're chosen. He said, we ain't chosen. I said, what it says? He said, I don't care what that says. He said, we're all God's kids. If I am, you are. And if you are, I am. He said, it makes the rain to fall on the just as well as the unjust, Johnny. And then I hit him with the big shot. You know what I mean? You always, you know, all those sick newcomers got something to nail them with. You know what I mean? These old fools have got all the answers. So then how come I'm sober? He said, that's very simple. You come to believe you aren't God's kids and act like it. Now how God's kids act? I don't know. Well, I'll tell you, there been 3 men in my life that I absolutely adore. One, 2 have been my sponsor, and the other, that old man, the closest thing to a father I ever had. And I watch these people. People call Chuck a great spiritual man. Chuck never said he was spiritual. Chuck was a man of action. Chuck got in that car and went out to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and talked to alcoholics night after night after night after night. He had him in his home talking to him night after night after night. Ron Alcoholics, my first sponsor for 22 years, was a man of action. He went to meetings night after night after night. He carried the message whenever he was asked to do it. My current sponsor, right for the last 19 years, since Norm died, a guy named Clancy. Clancy carries the message night after night after night. I can't call him up and say, I'm tired. I don't want to drive to San Luis Obispo this weekend. I ain't got time to talk to him. I'll go to Seattle. You can't argue with that kind of stuff, don't you? Yeah. So how do you guys act? You do it for free and for fun. You give a little just for the hell of giving it, Norm. You say, you're God's kids. And most of all, they made me believe I'm one of God's kids. My sponsor, Norm, taught me the greatest lesson I've ever learned in my life, in the means of Alcoholics Anonymous. The reason I'm sober and well today is this little lesson he taught me. I had a meeting with him one night, and I'm at the literature table at the coffee break. It's where all the giants gather. Look over the new stuff. He was up to our standards. And some guy walked up to me and tapped me on his ear and said, Johnny. And I said, yes. He said, man, you're a miracle, Johnny. So really. So then, I heard your story. You are a miracle, I suppose. Tell me more. Yes. By the time the coffee break was over, I'm sitting in my seat looking out the window to see where the ship is coming to take me home. You know what I mean? I'm ready, man. I'm not fishing. On the way home that night, we're driving down the freeway with Norm. And Norm looked at me and said, "What's the matter with you? I'm staring at the stars. I'm gone. I'm really gone." She said, "What's the matter with you?" And I said, "I don't think you understand this, Norm, but I'm a miracle. Do you know who damn near ran into the divider stopping the car?" He said, "You're a what?" I said, "I'm a miracle, Norm." He said, "Where do you get this stuff, Johnny?" I told him back at the literature table. He said, "Stay away from the literature table." He said, "You're not a miracle, jackass." He said, "Alcoholics Anonymous is the miracle. You're just a small part of it." Now, I don't know what that does for another living soul. I know what it does to you idiots. It kind of makes you hot. Made me hot when I heard it, so I know what I'm talking about. Kept me small enough to stay here. Kept me small enough to go sit in my seat on Monday night in my home group. Put the chairs away. Kept me small enough to go and stand at the door and shake hands with 1,000 alcoholics every Wednesday night as they walk in the door of a meeting. Kept me small enough to go sit in the 12 and 12 workshop on Thursday night so I could hear somebody else's experience on the steps and the traditions of this wonderful program that gave me life. Makes me go to book study meetings. It makes me work with newcomers. It makes me answer a telephone. I feel that the gate's open. It belongs to you. It belongs to you. I belong to you. But every little thing I have in my life, I owe the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything. Everything I may ever hope to have in my life, I will owe to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And dear friends, you better believe this. It's a long, long walk from the cell and solitary confinement of Acts Security Penitentiary to where I stand right now. But for the grace of God, AA and good folks like you, I could have missed it all. Thank you.